waiting on Yasmin to come through, and we'll see when she does. But so far, how are you, Sandy? How's your day?
Good. I have been anticipating this hoop talks because I think there's a lot going on in the NBA, and it's the perfect time for literally the perfect day for us to be on here talking hoops. Yeah, there's quite a bit to talk about today for sure.
There's so much going on in the basketball world, eh?
I know. We don't even know if the Celtics and the Raptors are going to be playing tomorrow. So that's a new development this last hour. I'm curious to see what's going to happen moving forward and if any other teams are going to start making demands in that type of way. Because essentially they did say that they would come into this bubble to have a platform to speak their mind and to push the message of Black Lives Matter forward. But it seems only a few teams are really taking it seriously or beyond just the t-shirt and the going on bended knee. So I do wonder if we're going to see that develop into something bigger. Now that they're in the bubble and a new shooting has occurred. So, yeah, no, it's good.
I know, absolutely. I mean, even starting with Fred and Norm's presser the other day, it was just so disheartening to, you know, not even just have them have to discuss this, but to see them being put in the same position over and over again to be like, how do you feel? Where is your head at? How are you impacted by this? And Fred had like the best retort. He was like, okay, like how do you feel asking me these questions all the time? What do you want to do to help us and to help make sure that the narrative is moving forward and that we're doing what we can while we're playing basketball? But I think that he also made a really good point that they tried not to make it a distraction, but it's kind of been a distraction, right? Like I will say, even for myself, I think I've been really guilty of just getting excited with the NBA being back and all these exciting series and these matchups and stuff. And you kind of forget, like, you know, they're wearing a shirt for a reason. They're kneeling for a reason. They're doing all this for a reason. That comes first. Basketball is afterwards.
Right.
And just as people, as talking about this, we 110% need to have, we need to be better at spearheading the conversation in the right direction. We need to make sure that because we've been given that platform, not just as, you know, podcast hosts or whoever it is, even as fans, it's your responsibility to make sure that you're speaking up for the things that these players are yearning for.
Yeah.
Because that's who you're watching. Like, that's who's entertaining you.
Right. I think this recent shooting, I think has kind of put things in perspective again, because I think we all kind of lost a little bit of the conversation as the playoffs have gone on. I think we kind of forgot the plot, so to speak. Like, what were we talking about before this bubble was even a concept? You know, these players said that they wanted to use their platform, and I think we lost some of that. I think we just got used to the t-shirt saying Black Lives Matter. I don't think, to be honest, I don't even think the players are thinking about it when they put those t-shirts on or they go on bended knee. It's become a little bit of a routine, and with this current shooting, I think it's put everything back into perspective. As for the presser yesterday with Norm and Fred, it was really, I completely understood where Fred was coming from. Like, I cannot even imagine what it feels like to continue to have the same conversation over and over and nothing changes. And it's like you have a predominantly white Raptors beat writers are predominantly white, and they probably haven't really written about these issues before. They're kind of being forced to talk about it now because of the platform, and because that's kind of what's been mandated, I think, by the NBA at this point, to have these kind of conversations. But you could tell with Fred and Norm, they were kind of like, oh, like, this is exhausting. You know, it's like, how many times do we have to say that Black Lives Matter? How many times do we have to say that just because someone, even if somebody's doing something wrong, it does not mean that the police have the right to shoot you? You know, that's what, you know, you go to jail for. You know, if you've done something wrong, there's a justice system in place. Not that it works, mm-hmm. but there's a justice system in place to take care of that. Even if he did something wrong, that does not mean that you get to essentially kill him or harm him. That's not your role. I don't see how that's protecting, and I don't see how that's serving. Again, so I really like that energy that Fred had. Like, I got it 100%, because it's like, this is, excuse my language, but this is bullshit. You know, like, this is, it's too much. It's too much. Like, how many of these do we have to see before things change? And to be honest, what can these basketball players do in a bubble? Like, and that's kind of the conversation that we've been having, like, prior to this bubble being formulated and them deciding to go. We had this conversation about it being a distraction, and I think it's hitting home for some of these players now. It's like, wow, okay, like, it really has become a distraction.
I mean, Kyrie was right, eh?
Kyrie was right.
I mean, Kyrie Woj wrote a whole hit piece on him being like, oh, Kyrie, the disruptor.
The disruptor.
He's right.
Kyrie
he's
was right.
100%. And here we have Yasmin. Hey, girl.
Hey, Yas.
She still looks shell-shocked.
Hi, Yas. Can you hear?
Yeah, I can. No, not anymore. Speak again.
Yeah, she'll be right back, but Kyrie was right. Kyrie was right, and I think it's a little bit, it's sad and hilarious at the same time.
I mean, Woj literally wrote a hit piece on him to, like, get him to just make him the villain, the bad guy, to be like, oh, this guy doesn't want the NBA to be back, and what, we're not even a month in, we're like, oh, Kyrie was right. Kyrie had the right idea. Kawhi wasn't right. Against the Clippers. But Kyrie was right.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, now we can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, we can
go.
Hi, yes.
Hey guys, how are you?
We're just
talking
about the mental state of the league right now, and what these players must be going through, having to, you know, like, these Black men who play basketball, they wake up every morning, they go through social media, they see people who look just like them just being vilified and put in dangerous situations for the color of their skin. And then these guys have to put their phones down, go to the court, and play for millions of people. That's such a draining thing to do. And then doing that in a bubble with not having, you know, maybe they've just had their family there now, but now it's just a draining experience in my opinion. And I feel like you're kind of seeing aspects of it happening with players like Paul George talking about how it's been affecting him. I forget who else came forward.
Rhett Hill came forward and said the bubble was really stressing him out, and you know, it's again, I think everything that's happened, again, with the recent shooting, I think has brought things into perspective for these players. It's like, this is, it's not just us being in a bubble, it's us being in a bubble and being affected by the things that initially, like, maybe we might have forgotten was happening, because you're in the bubble, you're existing only in your bubble, but now you realize, okay, wait, there's an impact here, and maybe being in this bubble, we're not able to make the impact that we want to be able to make. And I think that's also going to be draining, and we'll see the effects of that moving forward.
And then also, like, after the game, having the camera, like, shoved in their face and then asked to say, hey, how do you feel about so-and-so's death? Like, personally, I don't even watch those videos. Like, I can't handle it. So, yeah. Like, imagining that they have to comment on it as if that, like, I think Fred mentioned it, and I think he put it, like, beautifully, where he said, like, the responsibility shouldn't be on the people that are oppressed to comment mm-hmm. and to bring awareness and all that stuff. Like, it should be the ones that are in power, in positions of power, the people, like, for example, I think he mentioned ownership. Like, well, why isn't ownership lobbying legislators and politicians in the communities that they earn money from? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. if they're seriously worried about the safety of their players and their families and the fans that, you know, predominantly make up the communities that watch the games and the performances, like, wouldn't you make it so that the community is safer? You know what I mean? Wouldn't you make it so that the people that you hire are protected? But no. So I think he brought up like a really valid point that I don't think any other player mentioned. Like, why do I have to come here with cameras in my face and talk about how we're going to make the world a better place? Like, I'm just, you know,
I'm a basketball player. Yeah, you know, like, there are people with actual power.
Exactly.
That you should be pointing these questions towards. And
I think he even mentioned the Milwaukee Bucks owner. He was like, if he did something, imagine like the ripple effect that would cause within the government and everything else. But it's the wrong thing to do to put the cameras in players' face and be like, so how does this affect you? How are you doing mentally now? This must be just, you know, disheartening you and everything. And it's like, yeah, but why do you have to, you don't have to show their pain to make people realize that they're going through pain. Mm-hmm. It's on there. Everyone knows what's happening in the world. And yes, Anne just said, actually, she said Jaylen Brown has been talking about being depressed in the bubble, as well as LeBron. So these are big names and big players who are going through something, you know, they're going through a pandemic, going through a racial movement, and then you're also stuck in a bubble. The impact and the mental health toll that these players must be going through, I feel for them, and I hope that they're able to get the proper just help that they need and proper guidance that would help them get out of it.
Yeah. And then did you guys mention that apparently like the Raptors
Yes, you want to put your mic up a little bit here?
Oh, sorry.
It's all
maybe bring it closer.
Yeah.
How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, better.
Okay, yeah. So I'll turn it up. But yeah, did you guys hear about, I don't know if you mentioned it, but with the Celtics and the Raptors apparently discussing boycotting game one? I think Mark Spears just like moments ago tweeted that apparently the Celtics teammates and the Raptors have been having meetings since they're staying at the same hotel, the Grandestino, and discussing mm-hmm. like their options and the possibility that they can boycott game one. So that would be really interesting. It would be like, I think that would be like a real statement, because not only would they be I think they would be defying like the NBA, like ownership, like the league office and stuff, to do something like that. It would make like a real statement, and it kind of veers off the form of protest that we've been seeing, which is like the words on the back of the jerseys and stuff, like, you know, the lists that were provided to them and stuff. And now it's like, hey, we're gonna blow this whole thing up. How about that?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't even blame players who don't want to do that. But for those who do, like, if you want to engage in an effective form of protest that's going to gain attention and bring awareness and perhaps even like pressure ownership to actually do things in their community, then this would be it.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. Like, I'm like, a part of me is just like, oh my gosh, we waited for this matchup forever, and now because of these circumstances we might lose out on it. Of course it's the Celtics and the Raptors, okay?
Okay, we're not playing.
it's like the universe just refuses to allow this matchup to happen. But I think it's actually absolutely perfect, because of the fact that this is a matchup that I think everybody around the league wants to actually see. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's like literally,
yeah.
Right, it's literally the perfect time to make this kind of statement. And I think it is going to first force ownership to make some really big changes and really soon, because they did not come into the bubble to lose out on playoff games, you know, and lose out on revenue. That defeats the purpose. So I think ownership will probably figure it out before tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're gonna definitely get a statement from Woj saying that ownership of so and so and so and so is gonna do this and this.
We have two teams that just swept their opponent. Like, this is bound to be a fantastic series, not just on the court, but off the court. Like the fan base is going at each other, the passion and all that stuff. Adam Silver is going to definitely feel it in his pocket if we boycott this season. I think that's what's necessary. That's what's needed. Because you have, especially with the Raptors and Celtics, you have two very prominent and vocal rosters, because you have Jaylen Brown when it comes to Celtics and you have Fred and Norm when it comes to the Raptors. So these two teams together, they're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that they get the proper conversation going. And the idea of, you know, just a series is behind them right now. Even Fred was like, I don't want to answer any questions about the series. I'm not here to talk about this right now.
Right. I also want to point out that I don't know, but I didn't see Adam Silver put out a statement in regards to the whole Masai situation. And I'm actually really upset about it. Because we had all these rumors swirling about Masai going into the Knicks and going to Washington, and that was perfectly fine. But you find out that you're one of your employees, an important employee at that, was harassed, racially profiled and harassed at his job, and you have nothing to say?
I think he also doubled down on Masai when that happened.
He was kind of insinuating that,
we don't know the whole story. Like, he didn't go straight towards defending him at all. And then now that the truth is out there and Masai's lawyers released the videos, there's no, oh, sorry, I was wrong. Oh, Masai, our
leader. That would make a great statement if Adam Silver would come out and say something, but silence. Very interesting. I just wanted to bring that up.
I mean, he gave the players like 10 names to choose from for their shirts. I don't think
he's right. Good point.
What's going on? Point.
They can't even have no name on their jersey. It's just
That was so.
But awesome. I guess this kind of leads us into the Boston series. If they do play tomorrow, how do you guys? You guys think Kyle's back?
It's weird because I'm anticipating that he's going to miss game one. I'm like prepping myself for that. Mm. But I have a feeling he's going to play the whole time. Even like, as long as he has no like torn ligaments or broken bones, I feel like he's going to play.
And he would staple his foot on if he had to.
Oh yeah.
You saw especially for this.
Like a torn thumb throughout the most physical series I've ever seen. Yeah. I have a feeling that he will, probably, he said, I think it was Nick Nurse who said like during practice the other day that he's day to day. So I think that's good news. Even if we get 70% Kyle, that's still like better than no Lowry.
So
he has to play like less than 30 minutes. It's still like, you know, you can stagger he and Fred, you know, maybe you can have Kyle run the bench units or something just to kind of maximize him. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I hope he plays. And weirdly enough, like since the Celtics are missing Hayward, it makes it like less devastating, I think.
Yeah,
missing Lowry. So
I think so too.
I think it's a little more manageable than it would have been. Like if Lowry was missing and they were fully healthy, the Celtics, I think the Raptors would have lost kind of swiftly too.
Yeah,
I agree. I think for Hayward, because they would have to replace his production off the bench, and their bench doesn't really match our bench. We do pretty well.
Yeah, and with Smart starting. Yeah, Smart would have to start since Hayward's out. I think the only bench players they would have are like, who is it? Brad Wanamaker, who's like, he's good, but he's not really like the scorer that you need. I think he averages maybe like 7 points or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then they have Enes Kanter, who I think Serge matches up with really well. Like, I think Serge can kind of put him in like that pick and pop with Lowry or something, and kind of
he'd be barbecue chicken all over.
Yeah, like it can be bad. Like if Serge is on, it can get ugly.
Yeah,
because now he's playing he's playing like he was in like the Philly series or something.
No, he's going off. It's crazy.
Norman Powell and Serge Ibaka, like. Sorry, yeah, that's like the scoring punch. Like, I feel like Norm is like such an X factor for the series, because I feel like he is like, on a lot of teams, on a lot of contenders, he'd be the third best player like easily.
So, right, and he's coming off the bench.
Like, he's totally overqualified to come off the bench. So,
100%. Oh my God.
So if he comes out.
How is he coming off the bench for us?
Like, imagine you're like a bench player who plays like 17 minutes a night and you see this guy.
You
like,
see Norm just finishing.
You're like, what?
It's actually hell? Disrespectful. Like, what?
Yeah, it's so rude.
You go from like Freddie and Lowry to like Norm, like off the bench, just like
no breaks.
Oh
no
my breaks. God, that's crazy. So what matchups are you going to be looking forward to now that we know Hayward's not going to be playing? I think an
between
interesting
players,
one,
you mean?
Yeah, between players, okay. Like it would be interesting. Lowry and Marcus Smart, I think now that it's going to be interesting. I do want to see how Pascal is going to shape up in that series, especially with Tatum and the way that he's playing now. Gasol.
Gasol's a major one.
Yeah, Gasol is
like
a major
one.
He's
kind of struggled in the Celtics games that he played. I feel like he doesn't, but I don't worry about Mark because he's so smart. I feel like one film session and
he'll work out.
You know, he's a genius. True. So I feel like in those series, I don't think he's used to playing against a center like a Daniel Theis, who he's kind of quicker. He doesn't really score. All he does is set screens. So I feel like there's going to be a big emphasis on defense for Mark because they're going to bring him up high to like the perimeter like Steph Curry was. Right. So I'm interested to see in how he combats that being a bigger, slower guy. But then he's so good with his footwork, so he can, I feel like, manage that. Mm-hmm. But I'm also interested in, like you brought up Smart versus Kyle, which is awesome. Like, I think that's like the intensity is going to be so fun there and the defense. But I also am interested about Fred VanVleet versus Kemba. Because with the way Fred is playing right now, like I feel like if he has a good series, he can kind of establish himself as like
an all-star
caliber point guard. Because he's giving you like Kemba scoring coupled with his defense. I feel like this can be like a pivotal series for his like how he's going to be compensated in the future. You know, the difference between being a, I don't know, like a 4-year, $100 million guy versus being a max player. So it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see VanVleet like chasing Kemba around to see if he can stop him. I don't know. Like I'm nervous about this series for just because I feel like in the last game it was just the weirdest game. Like they could not make any shots. I don't know if they were just in their head, but like defensively they just weren't. They didn't look as fluid. Their rotations weren't as smooth. They left a lot of people open, and the people that they left open were hitting shots. At some point, the Celtics weren't even hitting. That game was just ugly. So I just want to pretend it didn't happen.
I haven't erased my memory. Or I say this was like Nick Nurse's like conspiracy game.
Throwaway game.
Like, I don't think it's real.
That one was a weird one. I don't really like, I'm not even like taking anything from it because I feel like every single time, like for the past few years, every time the Raptors play the Celtics, it's like a very even competitive game. I feel like the Raptors were due for like a regression night.
Yeah.
And they were knocking down shots like for games on end. So I feel like they were due a night where they were missing everything that they were open with. So like the Celtics are still awesome defensively, but that's not the reason I think why our good shooters were missing open shots. So, they just seem kind of out of sorts. I think that the playoffs, it would be a more competitive matchup. And I feel like for example, I think it was the last Philly series and even the Bucks series last year. I feel like Nick Nurse kind of would give it a game or two before he really puts in his game plan and kind of see how they, like, for example, I guess matching Embiid's minutes with Gasol.
Yeah.
He didn't do that until like game three or something.
Right.
And then the Raptors went on to like win 3 out of 4 games or something.
Right.
And then you have with the Bucks series where he didn't put Kawhi at the center of the wall until game three as well. Mm-hmm. So I feel like with the Celtics series, there's less of a margin for error because we don't have that generational superstar.
Right.
To kind of clear up your mistakes and stuff and allow you to have that huge margin of error. So I feel like if the Raptors come in and just gut punch them with the, you know, game plan immediately and then change it as they go so they don't get, you know, redundant,
repetitive.
And then I think it would be a good, I think I would favor them coming out of that, even though I don't even like predicting series.
Yeah. No, I do see the Raptors coming up. I'm just, I guess maybe the fan in me is kind of like, I need them to come out of this series just because this has been a series that we've been waiting for so long. If the Raptors lose, I'm going to be devastated.
Oh my God. So imagine I'm just the like, Raptors lose. I might have to leave Earth. It's not going to be pretty.
If they lose in 7, I wouldn't mind as much. If it's
right.
A 7-game series. Really?
Yeah.
Then it's like, oh, they put up a fight and they put up like a coin flip towards
yeah.
them. But if they're like gone in 5 or 6, we're going to become Dishes and Dimes Celtics podcast.
I already like Jaylen Brown, so I'm halfway there.
Yeah, I'm a huge Jaylen Brown fan. Tatum's nice. Like, they're all great.
Yeah, that's okay. I think for us, as long as you're making our shots, I think we win. Like, as long as we're making the shots, I think we're good. Because we have the defense on our side, we'll be fine. Like we mentioned, Hayward's out, so you're not really looking at the Celtics being too much of a threat. Like, they are top heavy, but I feel like we match up with them really well. But as long as we just make our shots, I think we're good. Like, I don't want to predict either, but Raptors in 6. And like you mentioned about Nick Nurse too, I think like even like maybe that's why I was thinking he might be doing some conspiracy stuff against the Celtics game before the playoffs started, just because he understands that Brad Stevens is also a good coach. Like, Brad Stevens isn't like Budenholzer. He's not going to not adjust. He's going to make the adjustments that he needs to do. And when you have a coach who's on top of his stuff and he's like really observing the game, you want to keep some cards to yourself. You don't want to show him everything that you've got. Like, you know, you're gonna have a tough series with him, because it's not just a matter of, you know, Kyle versus Smart, Tatum versus Pascal. This is also Nick Nurse versus Brad Stevens, and that is gonna be like the probably like one of the better parts.
Is I feel like it's gonna be a coaching battle, because I feel like the talent is pretty much even between both teams. I think the Raptors bench gives them the edge, but in the playoffs, it's really about your top 7, and top 7 versus top 7, they're pretty even.
Right.
So it's not as big of a discrepancy. So I think it's going to be really coming down to maybe on-court leadership. So who has the best guidance on the court, and also that the coaching, because it's going to be like a lot of chess matches. And, you know, Brad Stevens, he's like very interactive from court side, just like Nick Nurse. He's like right there yelling plays and like, you know, making calls, yelling at his players. So it's going to be really, really interesting.
So there's one particular matchup that I'm, again, Pascal and Tatum, right? What are you worried about in terms of that matchup? What worries you? What gives you confidence? How do you see that shaking up?
I think just Pascal being assertive and aggressive.
Yeah.
You kind of just want to see that side of Pascal. I want to see him take over Tatum. I think they will probably they will 100% rely on Tatum a lot. And I think Tatum's going to be aggressive. Tatum has been pretty aggressive, and he gets the rim at his will. And that's kind of what we need Siakam to do. His threes are great. Like, they're falling, they're doing really well, but we were going to need him to really drive and just be a nuisance in the paint, do what he can.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like the Raptors defend Tatum really well. It's weird that I'm not even like too worried about it, because he's the ultimate scorer, where he can score like on all three levels. But his one weakness is his playmaking out of doubles, out of like, you know, the blitz and finding his teammates. He kind of gets tunnel vision sometimes, and I feel like on the other side, Pascal's not the three level scorer that Tatum is, but he
better at
points
playmaking
sometimes for the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he had 10 assists the other night. He's a great playmaker. He's a very willing passer, sometimes too willing. It kind of reminds me of Kyle in that sense. So I think with him, it's like what you said, he needs to kind of remember that few players can guard him. I feel like that's what he was in the beginning of the season, and then he became a little bit more kind of shaky
tentative
in that sense. Towards the end of the season. But then I think he's finding that rhythm again. It's all about rhythm. He mentioned it. He says that, you know, the only thing that I feel different is that I'm not quite in that rhythm that I had before when he was on a run. So He needs to find that rhythm. And if the Raptors collectively guard Tatum well, I think that Pascal can win that matchup. The bodies they can throw at him are very limited. I think that they perhaps like Tatum and Brown, and then you have Smart, who's on the smaller side, but I think they're going to throw him on him just the way they do with, like, they throw him on Giannis. Like that will defend anybody. So,
right.
It's going to be they're going to be very physical with him. They're going to send a lot of looks at him, a lot of bodies. They're going to sag way back, like probably around the mid-range area, and allow him to take those things, which he's been willing to do. I like that he's built that habit up. So that, you know, after he hits a couple, they're gonna have to start to respect it. So so after, like, you know, if all those things go right, I think he can win that matchup. But at the same time, like, Tatum's so young and he's growing so exponentially, you don't know if this is the series where he takes another leap. So let's just hope that it's our all-star that takes that leap.
Right. No, that's what I'm hoping for.
I feel like when Pascal realizes that he's like 12 feet tall, he's good. Like, he's like, okay, like, no one can guard me. I'm like a giant. Like, no one can stop me. But then when he gets into that mode of being passive and stuff, then it's kind of just like, Pascal, like, you're 20 feet tall. Get in the paint.
I think he forgets that he could do the spin move. Like, sometimes he's in the paint and I'm like, this is your perfect opportunity to spin and, like, put it in the, and he just, and I'm just like, Siakam, like, I don't know if he's focusing too much on, like, developing his mid-range and the three that he's like
sometimes he passes out, and I'm like, that layup, man.
Bro, just take it to the hoop. You got this.
Not, like, everyday point guard.
Not everyday, exactly. Not everyday point guard. Oh my god. So I hope he just finds his rhythm in the paint a little bit, because I've been missing that. I've been missing the patent spin move. Like, we haven't really seen it in the last couple of games. And I'm just like, where is it? Like, I love the threes, but give me this spin, baby. Give me this spin.
Gotten a lot better after Kyrie left that. His passing has gotten a lot better. His playmaking.
Yeah.
He was like, he had what, like 10 assists that night? Maybe I'm
confusing it. He's just super turnover prone in the beginning of the season. Like, he would get every pass out the post would get, like, picked off by someone flying by.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's not the most accurate passer yet. That'll come with time, where he can get it right into, like, the shot pocket of a player. But he, like, knows who's available when, which is so important. Like, having that court vision. So I'd actually love to see him at point more often. And also, one thing that I would love to see is if Kemba goes nuts, put Pascal on him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he can keep up with point guards. He, that size, I feel like, would be overwhelming. I saw him on Caris LeVert a couple times, and Caris is, like, the same way, where he'll use that pick and roll and get really shifty around the rim and everything. And they would just put this 6'9" guy on top of him with quick feet. You know what I mean? So I feel like that would be like a kind of something in their back pocket if the matchup becomes overwhelming, because I don't even know who Pascal would be on. Maybe Jaylen Brown, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so.
He can, that makes sense. Because Jaylen takes a lot of, like, kind of catch and shoots and can run at him. I think that'll be what the option that they look at.
Yeah, and that's all tomorrow in case they decide not to boycott. We'll see what happens. And speaking of the Raptors' defense, did you guys see the list of the defensive nods? And there was not one Toronto Raptor mentioned. Not one.
Defense player of the year, yeah.
The team that parks the bus, the team that parks the double-decker bus, had no defensive nods. Like, we're like concrete.
But you know who did? Hassan Whiteside and
Andre Drummond.
And Drummond.
Drummond, bro. Oh, I don't even know.
That gave me a good laugh yesterday. That was so funny. And the guy who did it was, like, doubling down in the thread. He's like, no, I said what I said.
I voted for Drummond, you would never hear from me again. You wouldn't know who voted for Drummond.
And
Whiteside?
I don't know.
Over Giannis, I think he had he gave one of those guys the number one position. Like, even though, like,
Drummond,
Giannis was the best defender this season, like, period. Absolutely. I would have liked to see OG get a nod, even if it was, like, third place or something.
Yeah, like, me too, man.
I think it was Zach Lowe who said, this guy might be the best on-ball defender in the NBA. Like,
he is! 100%!
Yeah, like, he is shut down. Like, you can put him 1 through 5 on anybody and feel comfortable, you know, with the decision. So that was, I think it's very narrative based. You know, OG, he's a quiet offensive guy. He's making strides, but, you know, he doesn't have the high steal rate. You know, it's all very cerebral. His style of defense is all very
like you
smart.
Actually have to watch the game. That's the thing. It's not a highlight thing.
Yeah, it's all about he doesn't let players even attempt shots at him. They'll try and get away from him.
So right.
He's not always going to have those highlights. Like, they don't want to go at
him. Players don't come near him.
Like, OG's terrifying.
Also, speaking of the Celtics series, having Hayward out would probably allow the Raptors to put OG on Tatum, because usually OG tends to be on Hayward, I feel like, whenever I watch that matchup, because Hayward's a little too big for, you know, a Kyle.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so we put Kyle, I think, had the most time guarding Tatum throughout that series, so throughout the regular season series, so... And he did a great job, weirdly enough. Yeah. Like, Tatum averaged like 16 points on like really bad field goal percentage.
And Tatum said himself, he's like, when he was asked about the best defender in the league who guards him, he was like, it's not one person, it's a team. It's the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah.
Bill didn't get the defensive nods.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like most of these people don't actually watch the Raptors until they're in the playoffs, to be honest, because it doesn't make sense for like the number two defense in the NBA or number one defense in the NBA to have no nods. That actually literally makes no sense, like,
hopefully
at all.
Hopefully for all defense, we see like a couple guys get some attention, get some love.
It should make it. Fred's been really good too.
Right.
He's been off the charts. Like, I don't understand how you don't have Fred or OG. Like, you have two of the best position defenders in our roster. And there's absolutely no mention of the Toronto Raptors. The team that parks the bus.
This is why we're going to win a championship, because I think our team has a chip on their shoulder. They want the respect, and they're going to try to go out and get it, because this is just ridiculous.
Did you guys watch the Mavs Clippers matchup last night?
Girl.
A little bit. Yeah, I think I watched the first quarter and I saw it was doomed.
Yeah, I was like,
this one is the last one.
Like, I don't know. I mean, like, how are you guys feeling in terms of, do you think the Clippers are just going to, now that they have, I guess, a little bit, like, PG has gotten going in that game. How do you think it's going to shape up? Are the Mavs going to come back with another punch, or is it kind of the end of the series, so to speak?
I tweeted like right before the game, I have a feeling this is like when Paul George is gonna figure it out. That was my prediction. He's too good to just be like this awful for us. Like, we have to ask some serious questions if he stays like really bad. But he figured it out, and he had like what 35 points in less than 30 minutes, way less than 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I really
if Paul George is going off, like, you don't stand a chance against the Clippers, I feel like. If he figures it out, then they have two.
Everybody's done for.
Two players on one team, like.
Boo.
I would want to see Kristaps back. That would have been such a fun series with everybody.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't think Mavs must have much of a chance with Kristaps out and Luka being a little bit injured and. Oh my God, we talk about Morris's dirty trick.
I think it was dirty. I don't even understand why he was running. Like, okay, why were you running towards him in the first place? That's what I was trying to understand. Like, I didn't understand why he went towards him in the first place. Your team is running back. I don't understand why you ran there to begin with. Like,
someone showed another angle from like the side camera.
Yeah.
I think it was the rail camera. And you see that he like changes his pivot to like match Luca's foot. Like, he literally aimed for it. He was going this way and he shifted this way towards his feet. So it's intentional. And it's a Morris, like this particular Morris brother with a history of being really dirty on the court. Like this Morai, I think it was
one of the Morai.
But yeah, like that was just, and he has a history of it. People were like posting clips of past times where he's done like dirty things or just being like unprofessional on the court. I think this is the guy who's, you know, talking about feminine tendencies in regards to Jay Crowder. I think it was this Morai twin.
Yeah, it was that Morai. I don't know. Like, I feel like Adam's going to get him because that's Adam's new, like, shiny
golden ticket.
Like, oh, we got another one, and you went and stepped on his foot when it's already, you know, aching. Oh, you're in trouble. Adam's gonna, I can't wait to see what
warning. Fine.
He's not gonna be in NBA anymore.
He's not gonna. Yeah,
I know. I saw the same thing. I saw when he was taking his step forward, it was very natural. It was going into his direction, and the second, and then you see his left foot kind of just like match the trajectory of Luka's over his feet, and he kind of just like takes another extra hop too.
Yeah,
and steps in it. And it's like if it was anybody else, then you're like, okay, you know what? Give him
it
the
was
benefit.
An accident. Yeah,
yeah. He like it might not have been on purpose, but you know the morons like. it's in their history, it's in the blood,
I mean, I guess that's a good way to guarantee that you get to the second round. I guess that's a way to go about it,
but like that's like bad karma. You have Kawhi,
it's definitely bad karma, and if he did that intentionally, I just hope the Lakers just, I don't want the Lakers to win, but like if he did that intentionally, then
relax now.
I know, right? Anyway, yeah,
so let's move on to the next topic. Jamal Murray, I did actually watch that game because I thought it would be the night that Denver would be eliminated, so I'm like, let me see this. let me watch Michael Porter Jr. go home. So Jamal Murray, like, I feel like he had a very quiet first half, and then he just goes insane for the second half of the game. I think he had like 35 points or something, splitting double teams, dunking on people. Like, he just looked insane out there and sealed the game for them and was just that energy that they needed. And it's, this series is like weirdly interesting because I'm like, this is a snooze fest. Utah and Denver, I'm not watching this.
I know.
But then you have Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray who are like blossoming at the same time, just kind of becoming kind of like superstars, basically. Like, these are guys who might be all-stars next year, in the West, which is like particularly difficult. So they're going to be going up against shooting guards or point guards like Steph Curry and Harden and all that, so it's gonna be tough for them. But I feel like there might be a place for one of them there, so that this series is weirdly like amazing.
I think it's kind of boring, but then I'm like, wait a second, you're looking at Donovan Mitchell versus Jamal Murray, and then it's the Joker versus Rudy Gobert. Like, it's really good. And like you mentioned how Harris had a quiet first quarter for the first half, Joker made up for that. He was really, he had like, what, I think he was almost like undefeated from the 3-point line in the first quarter. He was killing it.
He didn't miss a shot at one point. No. Like, he was like perfect from the field until like the second quarter or something. It's
crazy.
But yeah, that series is actually like really, really good offense. So if you want to see like amazing offense, like just really pretty offense, I'd watch it. But yeah, like, what was it? Is Jamal Murray the best Canadian?
Yeah.
In the league, I still say, like, if I had to go around the team, I would probably choose Shai Gilgeous, because I feel like,
yeah, me too.
Like, his IQ, like, that's someone who can run a team. So, but like, as a pure scorer, he's like miles ahead. So, it seems he's miles ahead. Like, that 3-point shot, that pull up is like insane. It's something that he can do, like,
crazy.
Yeah, move forward with. So I'm probably gonna say Shai Gilgeous is the best Canadian in the NBA right now, but, and with the way he's playing in OKC and showing out versus Harden,
being hurt by Chris Paul, imagine his ceiling in a couple years. I mean, you know, like you said, we have a pretty good score at Jamal Murray right now, but Shai just being mentored and just being strung along with CP3 and getting all the proper ins and outs of the game and everything, he's going to be unstoppable in a couple of years. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, that series totally is agree. like seeing OKC play against the Rockets and like seeing them use that lineup where they put Gallinari at the five, I believe they put him. Like they bench Steven Adams. So they play like 3-point guards. They put like a small forward at the five. So they go super small to match the Rockets. Yeah. And like apparently I think it was mentioned that over the last 2 years that this has been the best lineups among 5-person lineups in the NBA like in the last 2 years. So apparently like the excess of playmaking and shooting on the floor is ridiculous. And that's including, I think it was on the Pound the Rock podcast I was on yesterday, where it was mentioned that that's including the Warriors' death lineup with, you know, KD and Draymond and Steph and Clay and Iggy. Like, that's insane.
That is crazy.
Insane.
Yeah. That's so crazy. Seeing the and the fourth quarter execution from CP3, like, you don't want to be in a close game in the fourth quarter. I think we saw it versus us, like when he was in Toronto with OKC. Yeah. Like, you don't want to be in a close game during the fourth quarter.
You don't want it.
Because
most clutch player,
that elbow jumper, there's no stopping him.
It's money. Money.
It's like Kawhi's shot. Like, it's going in.
It's going. There's no nothing around it. Yeah, I was going to say, I think he's like, he has the most clutch points, doesn't he, in the league?
Yeah.
Chris Paul? We know we talk about Jimmy Buckets, but like Chris Paul is just phenomenal. He's so good. And the fact that he's being mentored by, the fact that he's being mentored by, he's mentoring Shai. I don't know. I know CP3 is going to leave in a couple of years, but then just knowing that Shai is going to rise to the occasion right afterwards, I'm so excited. It's going to be nice.
Yeah. Who do you see winning that series?
Houston Rockets and OKC. Westbrook's not back until the next series, right? Or next month or something?
Yeah, it doesn't look like he's going to be back this series.
I can't count Chris Paul out.
Yeah, when you don't have, weirdly enough, when you don't have Westbrook, it's basically James Harden and a collection of vets, like just vet role players. There's no like young spark in like a Shea Gilgis or a Lou Dort, you know, Canadian who was guarding James Harden amazingly over the last four games. So at the end of the day, I was just shocked by how low IQ they were during the fourth quarter. Like they were throwing the ball out of bounds and stuff. Like they were missing shots. And like the Rockets are the only team in the league where they can hit 8 threes coming out of halftime. And just kind of, and you like any other team that does that, your spirit is just ruined. Like you're not.
It's just broken. Yeah.
But then you're like, oh, okay. They're gonna miss their next 27. Right. You just keep playing. Just keep doing what you do. Like it's not intimidating at all.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
They're so weird. They had so many threes. Like they had like 20 threes or something, and they were trailing
eight immediately out of timeout, out of halftime.
Real after like isn't this the league to have threes? Shouldn't like threes just win you the game? And you're trailing to OKC who has Chris Paul. I don't know, it's crazy. I think Houston's execution I'd be worried about, and compared to OKC's like master execution, anything could happen.
Weirdly enough, I think the second best crunch time team, or the two best crunch time teams in the NBA, I don't know which is first, but it's OKC and the Raptors. So, and then for the Raptors, I believe that it's Kyle Lowry who's leading the team in offense in the clutch in terms of just whether it's points or whether it's assists. And then for the OKC, it's Chris Paul. So,
another cute
parallel.
So cute. They're each other's tethered.
Imagine them together. There'd be so much ball handling. Imagine them on one team together. There'd be so much ball handling.
So much stress. That's what that would be.
Imagine you're a ref and you see that shift on your calendar.
It's like, I'm sick that day. I'm not going to work, bro. I'm not going to work that day because they're just going to be annoying. The annoying to pair, like,
you're gonna have to put earmuffs because they're gonna be yelling the entire game
because people are taking charges everywhere you turn. That would be amazing. When you get the rebound, like,
Squad brings out the rule book. He's like, "No, you're wrong. I have this right here."
The amount of
fouls right behind. Too.
Nightmare.
That would be hilarious.
Basketball gods, make it happen, please, just once.
I know that would be amazing.
It'd be so nice. Well, I guess that wraps it up for today's episode with Dishes and Dimes and Hoop Talks. I guess we'll see what happens tomorrow in terms of the game, whether or not the players choose to boycott. But no matter what it is, we stand behind our players and we can't wait to see you again. So take care. Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.